And thank you for those little splashes from your heart. That was a blessing to me. And I trust that your lives can be enriched just by our time together in the Word. I want to just say thank you so much. It's been a blessing sharing the Word with you. You've been a very attentive audience, easy to preach to. Thank you. Thank you for the little glimpses that I got into. It seems like it was a really short time, but I got just a few glimpses into some of your journeys, and it was a blessing. So thank you. Words cannot express our thankful, grateful hearts. And God bless you. And again, I told you the first night, I use a mailman mentality. So this is going to be the last message, and it's kind of like the mailman leaves your mailbox, and if there's any mail that you were expecting to get and didn't get, you feel free to say, "What's up?" And if you say, "Hey, this wasn't my mail," you feel free as well. And if any good thing came, you know where all good things come from. You know that. All good things come from the Father above. And some of us get the privilege to be channels of the good things. So praise the Lord together. That's a beautiful thing. So one more message, and I would like to talk about a fire. I'm going to use the title Altars of Flame. And the first picture I would like to paint in our minds is in Genesis. So I think this is the first mention of altar. So if you have your Bible and you want to open it up to Genesis 8, while you're turning there, you know the story. God was a little upset with his people, and he judged everyone, and everyone died that was disobedient. Everybody. Could you imagine that? Genesis 7, did you ever really walk through the flood and try to comprehend it? Well, you know the story about Noah. He gets on the boat after a long construction period and a lot of mockery, and he gets on the boat and it starts to rain. It rains for 40 days. The flood prevails for 150 days. Then the mountaintops are seen 73 days later. A raven was sent out 40 days later. And after that, 7 more days, a dove was sent out. 7 more days, another dove was sent out. 7 more days, the final dove was sent out and never came back. And then the earth's surface was seen 29 days later. And then finally the earth's surface was dried. And we have 57 days later, they get off the boat. I used to think as a little boy, 40 days on the boat, I can't believe it. I was dead wrong. 370 days on a boat. Any volunteers? On our wedding trip, we took a cruise. It was about 7 days. And one of us was really, really ready to get off the boat, and it wasn't me. Some of us handle sea better than others do. 370 days in the boat, what would you do? Now, this was not a cruise ship. Some of you went to the Ark Encounter. And it's kind of neat to see how they imagine it to be. Some of the things I never thought of, some of the logistics. And I really don't envision the 370 days on the ark as a picnic of any kind. But it was an obedient man that was spared. So if I'd have got off the boat, I wonder what I would have done or you would have done. I'm guessing I would have thought, finally, I'm not sleeping on the boat, and I'm going to pitch a tent, and I'm going to sleep somewhere else. That's going to, my family's not sleeping on the boat tonight. We're going to have a Dear Noah, what a man. First things first. Chapter 8. Verse 20 or 22. Thank you, God. First things first. Are you in Genesis 8? Verse 20. He builded an altar. Verse 21. The Lord said, "That smells really, really good." And then the Lord responds to Noah. This man at the altar, he responded and he gave the Noahic covenant, which is really beautiful. It's all about life. You know that? Multiply life. Multiply. Go out, scatter, multiply. I like that. That was a really, really good principle. Life. Multiply life. Sustain life. Animals are now going to fear you. You can actually eat them now. Protect life. Somebody, if an animal kills somebody, that animal dies. And likewise with humans, capital punishment. Protect life. And finally, enjoy life. Don't worry that this is going to happen again. I'm going to put a rainbow in the sky, and you're going to, every time you look at that, just don't. If otherwise, Noah probably would say, whoa, there's a cloud coming again. Here we go, 370 days in the boat again. No. The covenant was multiply life, sustain life, protect life, enjoy life. Because of an obedient man at the altar. So, God bless my wife and my daughter who helped me build an altar. So this altar is, hopefully the imagery of it enhances what I'd like to portray this morning. And the reason I like to use an image is because the image of an altar is foreign from our minds. We really don't use the imagery of an altar. And I see some of you in the back really straining to see. There's my altar. And it's something that we don't see. Altar's broken down. We'll get there. We don't see it. Had we lived in the Old Testament, we would know exactly what that means. 378 times you'll find the word altar in the Bible, woven through Genesis through Revelation. And my goal this morning is to do three things. I want me to look at my altar. I want to encourage all of you to live on the altar. And thirdly, and most passionately, I want you to examine, is there a fire? Is there a fire on your altar? Or is it going out? Or has it went out? In so doing, my dear brother, my dear sister, if you've got a fire, I'm telling you, you, without saying a word, without teaching a lesson, without preaching a sermon, you got a following. You got a drawing. You are drawing people into the kingdom. And I'll quickly say, conversely, if you don't have the fire and you got some kind of form, maybe it's a form outside, maybe it's a little form here, maybe if you got some kind of form without a fire, you're actually pushing and sending people the wrong way. There's a man that I have a great appreciation for. His name is James Montgomery. The reason I like him because he wrote a few hymns that I really enjoy. And his father was a Moravian minister. Anybody study the Moravians or a Moravian fan? I'm kind of a Moravian fan. Back in the day, they're the group that had a 100-year prayer meeting. Get that. You want to organize something? Some of you visionary folks, organize a 100-year prayer meeting. The Moravians apparently had a 100-year, for 100 years, they had somebody praying all the time. And that boggles my mind. But you study Moravian missions and Moravian history, it is absolutely amazing what they have accomplished. Anyway, there was a man named James Montgomery. His father was a Moravian missionary. And both of the mom and the dad, both mother and father, died in service. Again, kind of foreign to some of us. Mom and dad go out as missionaries, and mom dies, dad dies. This is what really kind of strikes a chord in my heart. One of them was buried in Tobago, and one of those was buried in Barbados. and go to their graves and see it today. And the reason that strikes a chord with my heart is we spent several years in Grenada. So just a little south of Grenada is Tobago, Trinidad, Tobago, and just a little north of Grenada is Barbados. So Grenada is kind of sandwiched between those two islands. And that's just a little nugget that is kind of special to me. But unfortunately, James strayed from God. Godly mom and dad, son strayed. And he left God. He left God's people. He went out and lived a very reckless life. And he came back to God in his 40s. And he wrote a song. And some of you might recognize this song. People of the living God, I have sought the world around. Paths of sin and sorrow trod. Peace and comfort nowhere found. Ring a bell, anybody? Yep, okay, few. Then he says, now to you my spirit turns. Turns a fugitive unblessed. Are you following me? He sought the world. Paths of sin, paths of sorrow, peace and comfort, didn't find it nowhere. Now to you my spirit turns, turns a fugitive unblessed. A fugitive, he's running. Here's my point, here's my line. Brethren, where your altar burns, oh receive me into rest. You know what he's saying? That's probably not the way I would have said it, but you know, what he's really saying is, I went out and lived in sin. I found no rest at all. Now my spirit's turning to you. I used to think that's to God. It's not to God. This is people. He's addressing the people of the living God. You can't separate God's people and God, really. But he's saying, now my spirit turns to God's people. And I'm a fugitive. And I know I'm not blessed. And then he says, brothers, your altar was burning. Your altar had a fire on it. Your altar had something there. Your altar just drew me. And that encourages my heart. And I am going to say that if you've got a fire, if you've got a fire burning in your altar, you are drawing people to you. And you are meeting people day after day after day that are living in their crossroad years. They've got questions like never before. And if you've got a fire burning on your altar, you are drawing people to you. And unfortunately, conversely, like I said, broken altars without fire, I really believe, drive people away. I've seen some tragic things in my time. I like 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds. They're great. Hang out with them as much as you can. Really, listen to their stories, because they have a perspective that many of us don't have. I'm only 50. I'm a young man. I'm just me and you guys, yeah, we're like this in age. But I've lived long enough to make some observations. You have too. And in relation to God's people, church, etc., here's an observation that I have made. I have observed that there sometimes we get so focused on application to principle. Okay? We get so focused on here's how we apply it. And don't misunderstand me, that must happen. A principle that's unapplied is not even a principle believed. A principle applied is a principle believed. But if I'm going to lift up to you an application to a principle and say, this is the fire. If you don't do it, you've got no fire. I don't know if you're following me or not, but that turns people away. That will draw people away. And you'll see a reactionary spirit. And they'll take exactly the thing that you may have lifted up as adorning the doctrine of God, and they'll react to it and go the opposite direction. And I really believe that it comes down to a fire principle. An altar that's aflame, an altar that's burning. So I have a deep, settled conviction. And my deep, settled conviction is that I cannot afford to live life. I cannot afford to live life without a fire burning on my altar. And in the Old Testament days, it was simple. You just simply had a visible fire that burned on the altar. But what does a fire look like in today's world? What does it mean? We don't see these altars, but yet we do. Hebrews, I won't get there. But Hebrews 13, maybe I'll reference it later. If you want to jot a note down, Hebrews 13, verse 10, somewhere around there, it says, "But we have an altar." So that this is New Testament. He says, we have an altar. And then he's basically saying to those that are trying to please God by externals, and especially Judaism and those that are adhering to the Jewish religion, they have no right to our altar. We have an altar. And the altar is simply the cross of Christ. Really, I should put a cross. Actually, yeah, this is great. This is just perfect. There's our altar. Okay? We're seeing past the altar, and it's the cross. The cross is our altar. So, am I at the cross? Are you at the cross? Is your life all about the cross? Are you glorying in the cross? Does everybody know you know that man, that woman, they're about the cross? Paul said, I glory. God forbid that I, save that I glory in the cross of Christ, something like that. He just had a passion that if I'm not glory, if that's not my passion, if that's not what I'm all about, that's going to turn people away. So my encouragement this morning is to examine our altars, and I'm going to name a few. I'm going to name our personal altars. I'm going to name our marriage altars. I'm going to name our family altars, and I'm going to talk about a church altar briefly. I would love to go through the book of Genesis and pick up a man named Abraham. If you're taking notes, study Abraham sometime, and you will discover that there's two images that follow his story. And it's number one, I read it this morning, I used to say it like this. Abraham's imagery went like this. He pitched his tent and built an altar. But I was wrong. I read it this morning. It's the opposite. It's the other way around. I think every time you'll find it, he built his altar and then he pitched his tent. So the two pieces of imagery that follow Abraham's life was the altar, which signified his worship. He was a man of devotion, a man of passion, a man of dedication, worship. And then the altar, the pitching the tent. And that one's a little hard for me to preach because, you know, what kind of imagery do I represent in my life? In other words, does my life say, that man's not home? Everything about that man, he's not home. He's just camping. When I go, my family picked up camping about 3 years ago, maybe for the first time. We loved it. I don't know why we love it, but we love it. Who would leave a nice bed and go to a campground and sleep on a cot and say they love it? But we actually love it. But we stay there, what, two nights max? Maybe we did three nights. And I'm kind of ready to get back to civilization again, right? So, but life, does my life in some way, shape, or form, and this might vary a lot in how we apply it, but it is a doctrine that must be applied, we're not home yet. I'd love to walk through Abraham's life and look at his personal altar, look at his marriage altar, look at his family altar. But we know that he had a personal altar. His life was marked with unconditional obedience. He went out, he had questions, lots of them. Obedience was there even when he didn't have his questions answered. I'd love to examine his marriage altar. You know, what do you think? Let's grade him. 1 to 10. 10, great. 1, marriage counseling, more than that, okay? Actually, I shouldn't have said that. If anybody here goes for marriage counseling, that's a good thing. I think more of us should go. Really, we should. So that's not the one. Marriage counseling is, I'm going to say 10 is a perfect marriage. 1 is a marriage where they just scream at each other and they, you know. Abraham and Sarah, what do you think? 9? 8? 7? 6? 5? I'd say about a 7. He's all right. I picture him as a tender-hearted leader. Sometimes too tender. Sometimes, sure, honey. Yeah, good idea. Bad idea, Sarah. Really bad idea. But I just picture Abraham as that kind. I don't think Abraham got really upset and would throw stones. I think he was just a great guy. Sarah, I don't know. I read about her and I think, man, let's slide her down to about a 3 or a 4, some of her things. But hey, you show me a woman that her husband one day says, hey, honey, we're moving. Pack up. Where are we going? I don't know. Pack up. Okay, I'll pack up. And they packed up and they went. You show me a woman like that. I focus sometimes on her helping God out with her bad ideas or some of those things. But hey, they're great. Abraham and Sarah, wonderful, wonderful marriage. Sarah is credited to have a meek and quiet spirit. In the sight of God, you can't put a price on it. And she reverenced her husband, even calling him Lord. How many of you ladies woke up this morning and said, hey, Lord, where are we? When are we leaving? Don't ever do that, honey. Do you get the picture? I'd say he had a good marriage. I'd say his family altar was burning too. I just get the picture that this man knew how to draw everybody in. You walk into his home. I mean, one night a visitor shows up and says, hey, Lot is gone captive. And within hours, he galloped 318 miles and he took down 4 kings. And that don't just happen in an unorganized home. Visitor shows up. A little bit later, they're eating a feast. Maybe in my home, visitor shows up. Your home, visitor shows up. Oh, shoot, where's the knife? Honey, where's the knife? Let's go butcher some. I don't know. You had the knife last. No, I didn't. You had it last. And you know how some of my home reflections are. This man had a home where things were in order. He could go take down 4 kings in a moment. He could host angelic visitors without text messages saying we're coming. I'm impressed. Which father could say, hey, son, we're going up to worship tomorrow. God told me, we're getting up early. By the way, set your alarm for 5 a.m. Sure, Dad, 5 a.m., almost normal time. And they march up through. And then son says, hey, Dad, we got everything, but we don't have the offering. And Abraham chokes back tears and he says, well, somehow God will provide, right? I'm going to suggest that he was emotionally available in his home. He was there. The man was there. Switch over to Lot. One day Lot gets spiritual for the first time. Lot says, hey guys, let's get together and have family devotions. Now I'm paraphrasing. I mean, the angel was there and they were at dire straits and let's get out. Let's quick get spiritual. And you know what his children did? They mocked him. Sometimes we get to work with people closely, and sometimes we're almost like we're running at an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, and we should be sounding the warning clear at the top of the cliff. Well, this time I felt I was at the bottom of the cliff, and I was talking to somebody, and I said, well, maybe we should start with sitting the family down and having devotions. Can you do that? He said, no. They'll laugh at me. That was so revealing. You earned it. You earned that. That didn't just happen. That doesn't happen. I'm talking about an altar that's burning. I'd like to go into the Old Testament and look at the step into the outer court. You know, we're talking about the imagery of an altar. We could step in the outer court and we'll find a 7.5 foot this way, 7.5 feet this way, and 4.5 feet high. We missed it just a little bit in dimensions there. Get that? 7.5, 7.5, 4.5. And the fire never went out on the altar of burnt offerings. And in Leviticus, it almost breaks my heart when you read about the commands. When you sinned and you brought an offering to the temple, you brought along a lamb without blemish. Don't go get the outcast. Get your best. The best one. and you bring it willingly. Don't make your neighbor say, I saw you do it. Go get your lamb, buddy, and take it to the altar. No, willingly. You get that willingly, you take it to the altar, you put your hand on the head. Now imagine doing that. I think everybody, all of us should have a pet lamb, bring it in our house, love it for a year, and we'd get attached. And then, well, any animal favorites, or any passionate animal folks here, take your hand on the lamb, take a knife, and right through the neck, when the animal just bawls out, and you lay it on the altar. That's what they did every day. The animal would bawl out, and it would be a picture of substantiatory sacrifice. In other words, dying in my place. I was wrong, took it out on the lamb. That's exactly what we see at the cross. We forget it at communion service, but that's the picture. That is the picture. In my place, dying. I bet there was three kinds of people that came to the cross and did their thing. Number one, I'll bet you had the people that just kind of half-heartedly, casual, go through the motions, you know, just, there it is, did exactly what I was supposed to do, and he did, to the T, did it all. Willingly, yep, nobody forced him, and went his way. And he didn't hurt, it didn't bleed, it didn't feel. Then I'll bet you had another kind of a guy that would come and he would do it, and he would do it in a kind of almost a timid, fearful way, and he would do everything is prescribed, and he would go on his way, and he simply couldn't believe that that would really please God. I don't believe it. I just can't believe it. It's okay now. My guilt is so strong that I know God said it, but I don't believe it. There's a lot of us that do that. And then I'll bet there was a third type, and it's exactly what God wanted. You know, they took the perfect lamb, and as he laid his hand on the head and took the life, it hurt so bad. It just killed him to know that he was the reason it died. And he never did it again. That's what God wanted. That's what God wanted in the sacrifice. We could walk into the inner court and talk about the altar of incense and the command not to offer strange fire and so on. But I want to go to one more altar yet, real quickly, and this is in 1 Kings 18. You know the story. There was a showdown on Mount Carmel, and it was a showdown between Elijah, who felt so alone, and the prophets of Baal. Now, you know that Israel had stooped down to Canaanite religion and they adhered to it in almost every form. Some of the Canaanite religion is almost too despicable to talk about. Some of the things there, the sacrifices that they did, is just incredible. Baal worship, I almost say don't study it, but yeah, do study it. And then you'll see some parallels in our pornographic society today. Well, there was a showdown and Baal was trying so hard, the prophets of Baal were trying so hard to get Baal to respond with fire. And you know, it didn't work. I actually kind of chuckled this morning as I was reading the account. Elijah mocked Baal, Baal's prophets. They were calling, they started jumping on the altar, Baal, Baal, Baal. And Elijah kind of liked it. He says, hey, a little bit louder. Cry a little louder. He might be on a journey. He probably went on a business trip. And something in me says, yeah, go ahead, Elijah. Do that. And then it was all over. Nothing happened. And they did some very despicable things, those prophets of Baal. But now it's Elijah's turn. And the first thing he did, he kneels down. Do you know what he did? He repaired the altar of the Lord. And maybe I should have 12 stones. But first of all, he said, while he was doing it, he says, come near, come near. And everybody's, you know, on the outskirts. He said, no, come. You know, I should have got everybody get up off their seats and make a big circle around here. No, come closer, closer. And all of a sudden, he probably hardly had place to work, this dear man. And he built the offer, built his altar. He repaired the altar that was broken down. That's a sad verse. altars of God that are broken down. And you know that altars of God that are broken down have no fire. It's bad that they have no fire. It's bad when there's an altar that has no fire. It's worse when they're broken down. He repaired it. He put it all into place. Put the sacrifice on. Douse it! What? Douse it! Doused it! What, four buckets? Do it again! What? Yep, four buckets again. Do it again! Doused it again! And then just a real humble way. God, send the fire! You know the story. The fire of God came down and it just licked up all the water around the trenches. And what a story. What an incredible story. The fire of God will fall on an altar that is in place. And a humble, broken spirit before God that is serious with God. The fire will fall. You'll see it. I'm not talking about a visible flame. I'm not even talking about what happened at Pentecost, but yes, I am. I'm talking about something that you can see. How many times have you looked at a man's life and said, something happened. Something happened in life. That man's passions changed. That's the fire of God I'm talking about. And I would to God that every one of us would say, that's where I want to live. First of all, how is my personal altar? How is it? We talk about our quiet time, but if you buy a five minute a day for the busy man, 5 minute with God, 5 minutes with God in the morning for a busy man, you can buy the book. Don't expect a fire. Now, granted, there's going to be many days where you'll barely have 5 minutes. And this don't ever get into a mindset that you can a mechanical mindset that you check you can do your check off 45 minutes and not meet the fire. But your personal altar, is it, how's my marriage altar? This one's really good. I want to see your hands. How many married people here? Whoa! Not a lot of marriages represented. Good. Couple brewing. That's good. Honestly, we talk about marriage altar. Stop for a minute and really ask yourself, how is it? Now, don't grade each other's marriage. Do you have a 10? Yeah, don't raise your hand. You got a 1? Don't raise your hand. 5, yeah, we all put our hands up. Average. Does your wife know that she is secure? Does she feel the agape sacrificial love? Does she feel loved? Or if you get inside, if you would listen to her pray, did you ever hear somebody praying? Did you ever eavesdrop a prayer? That's where you really know what's going on. I didn't tell my wife this, but I saw her on her knees the other day, and I felt like just getting close, and she could hear her mumble. I didn't do it, but I would have loved to. When you hear somebody pray, would have I heard her say, tell God about her unmet longings? Would I heard her say something to God about my fathering? When's the last time we as men said, you are just absolutely beautiful? They like that. You know that. They like it. And even our daughters need to hear that. Wives, do the men feel respected just as a man? Not apart even from their performance. And trust me, we don't deserve it. We don't. We don't deserve it. Right, men? We just simply don't deserve the respect that they give us sometimes. But are there unmet longings in his life? When's the last time after a family devotions or a leading out in prayer and spiritual, thank you. Thank you for your leadership. Marriage altars. That is such a big one. Family altars. Is it normal to sit together and worship? Is that normal? one of my favorite scenes at our church was a couple years ago. We had an evangelist, and a whole night he talked about family worship. And he was one of those real gentle evangelists that hardly raised his voice. And when he was all done, in such a very calling, gentle way, he said, "Okay, fathers, how many of you would join me?" And it was up in the front corner. It was one of the most beautiful scenes. I wish I would have had pictures and a video of young men. They knew. They knew the family altar needed repair. They knew it. I'd love to talk about a church altar. I had heard a story just last week of a man that woke up on Sunday morning and he said, "I probably should stay home this morning." He had physical conditions, and he said, "Now I'm going to church. I just want to go." So he went. During the church service, he collapsed. Fortunately, some EMTs got around him, and they got him help, and he survived. And the hospital told him, and he lived alone, by the way. He was a widower. And the medical team told him, "If you'd have been alone, you'd be gone." Interesting story. Can we apply? Do you see the spiritual connection? There's a lot of people that are dying because they never read, or either they don't care about, forsake not the assembling. That simply means it's a command. Don't stay away when the God's people get together. And I know that verse is often used on a Sunday morning when a lot of more people were here than during the weekend. And I'm no means in any way trying to be judgmental or critical. But honestly, there is a church. You know, Jesus said, when you come to the altar, that's kind of, and you bring your gift, but then you remember. So there's something about a church altar that I believe merits attention. I'm done. What's our attitude at the altar? My passion and my prayer and my plea is that our altars would be burning. I'm not sure how to close this one. Here's what I'm going to do. If you're here this morning, and as we conclude these meetings, and you know, there's something. I don't care if it's your personal altar. I don't care if it's your marriage altar. I don't care if it's your church altar. I don't care if it's your family worship altar. I don't care what kind of... You know there's a stone that you are going to determine to change. I would like you to come and kneel, or even if you're not comfortable with that, kneel right where you're at. And we're going to have a short prayer, and I'm done. But it's an invitation for you to respond. Come and kneel. Could we say one verse of "Just as I am"? Just as I am. We can know that by heart. We don't have to look around. We don't have to look at songbooks. We just pray, and we seek God. How is my altar? And if you would like to come around the altar, this isn't going to be a time where we're going to have time to go and pray, but it's between you and God. It's something that we can do visibly in light of repairing altars. So let me just pray first. God, I know we all long to have the fire. And if there's a specific area, show us. We know we have an accuser of the brethren that would love to heap condemnation and just put a cloud over us and make us feel guilty. But you always speak in a very clear voice, a gentle voice. And if you spoke to anyone in a clear, gentle voice and you want them to just kneel where they're at or come forward, please give them the courage while we sing. In the name of Jesus, amen. Let's sing "Just as I Am." I invite you to come and kneel, or kneel at where you're at if you know that there's